We have with us live in the studios once again, Jav Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with you at this stake. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right. Lots to cover this week, starting with a couple items, election-related items.
Yeah, this is something that just started coming out late yesterday. The King County Republican Party, the King County GOP, is paying canvassers today, tomorrow, Monday, and Tuesday $20 an hour between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. each day to apparently go door-to-door in select neighborhoods, and it'll be interesting to ask the question of how they select those neighborhoods, to help people fill out their mail-in ballots. And once they're filled out, or if they've been filled out but haven't been mailed yet, they will provide the generous public service, because they're just trying to make sure everybody's voice is being heard, and actually take those ballots from you and take them to the King County elections for you. It's a very generous service, were it not for the fact that Republicans in various parts of the country, including in Virginia and most recently in Boulder, Colorado, have been taking voter registration and things like that, and if they're from the wrong people or filled out the wrong way, throwing them out. This is something of a concern, shall we say. It's bad enough.
It's concerning enough that the King County Elections Office has a warning on their website telling people that they should not give their ballots
on the front page of the website, saying don't give your ballots to anybody. You know, if and this is me talking, not King County Elections, but if somebody comes to your door asking to take your ballot, slam the door and call 911.
Tell them someone trying to steal
ballots. The other thing is that some of our enthusiastic 14 people who listen to this show are actually going to go over to the King County Republican Party headquarters at 10 o'clock this morning and make some money. Yeah, heck, it is $20 an hour, and it's their money, and if they want to spend it, by gosh, we should spend it. And, help people fill out their ballots, perhaps. And I would recommend, if you want to do that, take a roll of stamps with you. And when you take those ballots, just stick them in the nearest mailbox. Because if you just hand them over back at Republican Party headquarters, they may or may not get to their intended source. So the location of the King County GOP headquarters, it's over in Bellevue at 845 106th Avenue North in Bellevue, 98004. If you have concern, and we'll give that address again at the end of the show also, if you're interested in going over there, 10 o'clock this morning or tomorrow morning, or Monday or Tuesday for that matter, at 845 106th Avenue North in Bellevue. If you want to try and track whether the ballot that you hand to somebody, or for that matter, the ballot that you've mailed, has in fact been received and counted, there's a tracking website that King County Elections does for that very purpose. It's info.kingcounty.gov/elections/ballot-tracker.ASPX. And we have a story up on this on the King County website that has that link and a number of other links on this as well at eatthestate.org.
And please let us know if you do participate in this project. Please let us know how it goes and what you see and hear.
Yeah, well, I have at least one friend who's planning to not only go but try and record their training for this. We'll see what comes of this, and if we hear back anything, we'll let you know next week.
All right. Other election-related news?
Yeah, this week the charter school, the pro-charter school initiative gained some more money.
The one with 60 bazillion lawn signs around town?
Yeah, gained some more money, even more money. Paul Allen stepped forward. He had previously given about $100,000. He gave $1.5 million to the initiative this week.
Which you have to understand is a business investment for these folks.
Yes.
And they're planning to make it back. It's that lucrative. You know, very similar to the Costco Liquor Initiative last year, only this time with K-12 education.
Yeah. And Kemper Holdings, owned by Kemper Freeman, the big Bellevue developer, he gave $100,000 this week. Now, I want to the pro-charter campaign has gathered about $10.8 million total in order to get this initiative passed. The anti-charter folks, on the other hand, have only raised about $688,000. So the ratio here, the pro-charter campaign has raised more than 15 times more than the anti-charter school initiative campaign. And we'll see if that 15 times more figure is enough to get it passed.
All right. Other election-related news or Moving
on.
Oh,
well, we'll hit someone when we get to the alternate
the
universe.
All right. Well, all right. Let's move on then to national and Hurricane Sandy.
Blows, huh?
Yes, it does. And it is the real world intruding on the alternate universe this week. What struck
me... Climate change? Did somebody in this campaign mention climate change?
Nobody in the campaign mentioned climate change. And Hurricane Sandy kind of stepped on the scene to say, well, here's the big elephant in the room that nobody is talking about. There were a couple things about Hurricane Sandy that really struck me this week. One is that the response to it, the government's response to it in the aftermath of the hurricane, here it is, it's day five, and there are still plenty of people in New York City, not just in the outlying areas, which were actually hit harder in New Jersey and other outlying areas, that have gone for now 5 days without power. You have to remember, you know, it's not just losing lights when you lose power. And there are plenty of people around this area who know what that's like when we get a big windstorm or there's flooding and we lose power. But you also, you know, you're without clean water, you're without heat, you don't have hot water to sterilize things. And of course, going 5 days without power means you can't cook anything. So you're eating out of cans.
And no internet access, which is even more important.
And no ability to use your cell phones because the cell phone towers are not working. They rely on electricity.
Or even if they are, you can't charge your cell phones.
Yes, exactly. So, and as people are finding out on all up and down the East Coast that no power means no ability to pump gas, which means you can't get anywhere either to go buy clean water or go buy canned goods. So the government standard, even here in King County, you can go look at King County emergency planning information, and it tells you have enough food and water on hand for 3 days. Well, the days when you could expect FEMA and help to arrive within 3 days of a disaster are long, long gone. Hurricane Katrina proved that, and now all of the lessons that we were supposed to have learned from Hurricane Katrina have shown that Hurricane Sandy has really proved that that's true.
Yeah, and that 3 day response would actually require, you know, sufficient funding to have disaster preparedness and disaster response be a government function. And aren't you glad that we don't have President Romney who had dismantled or privatized disaster relief? Because those folks would still be waiting for power in 2016.
Yeah. Well, even with Obama in office and with the Republicans, you know, creating this deadlock in Congress, trying to get money for FEMA has been difficult. And
not only that, they had to rebuild FEMA entirely because Bush had gutted it.
Yeah. And there are parts of the East Coast that are not going to see power restored for more than a week and a half after the storm. That's the projected rescue time for these folks who are trying to live on canned food and trying to scrounge up clean water and get gas and all that kind of stuff. So that's the first thing that really struck me about Hurricane Sandy is that we've now entered a brave new world of no government help in the face of a disaster. The other thing that really struck me is that the disasters that we're seeing are now much bigger and they're much more frequent. And that has to do with, yes, the elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about with global warming. We've known hurricanes in the past, like I say, Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane Irene hit New York just last year, and a lot of the people who prepared for Hurricane Sandy were taking Hurricane Irene as their gauge for what could potentially happen, and yet more than 40 people have died, and probably many more, in the city of New York, and many more people outside of New York in the areas that were hit harder. Because folks just did not have any concept of what this storm was going to be like. And there really was no way for folks to know that what a 15-foot tidal surge pushed by 80-mile-per-hour winds was going to look like in the city of New York and in the outlying regions of New Jersey.
At high tide with a full moon.
At high tide with a full moon. Yeah, and so there were certainly variables here that didn't relate to global warming that were, you know, behind some of the intensity of Hurricane Sandy. But the size of the storm and the fact that you're talking about an ocean that is much warmer than it's been in the past
and that there's more moisture in the air, that's all related to global warming. That you could have something that warm that far north this late in hurricane season, is nearly unprecedented.
Yeah, yeah. So the third thing that really struck me, in addition to the fact that, you know, here's global warming stepping on the stage, making itself known, is Mayor Bloomberg, just a few days after the storm, announced on Thursday that he was endorsing Obama for president. And this is after both candidates for president, both Obama and Romney, have been courting Mayor Bloomberg, a major political figure in the nation, to try to get his endorsement. Bloomberg had stepped back, and he wasn't going to endorse anybody. But he said on Thursday, yes, he's endorsing Obama because Obama is only one of the two candidates who is doing anything about global warming. And, you know, that's commendable. I want to say, you know, thank you, Mayor Bloomberg, for stepping forward and doing that. However, this example of a very intelligent man, of a person who has so much influence on the national stage, waiting until global warming has hit his front yard and destroyed half of his city to come forward and say anything about it and make a decision on that basis, that makes me profoundly depressed about human nature in general.
And angry. And, you know, Bloomberg is a billionaire. He is a plutocrat. He is a natural ally of Romney. He is a natural ally of the financial sector and Wall Street. And with the exception of certain sectors like the insurance industry, the plutocrats who have enormous influence in our political system have been perfectly content to let the global warming denialists gum up the works. It's literally when Wall Street is being bailed out with buckets that they suddenly stand up and take notice. And that is just appalling.
Yes, it is.
I would add a couple of other quick things. I know we got to move on. Mm-hmm. One, watching Romney yet again try to etch-a-sketch his past history of promising to privatize FEMA and pose himself as saying, well, I never said anything like that, as though, video or the Internet does not exist. And the other is, you know, we finally found something this week that is worse than inside the Beltway political pundits pontificating endlessly about the horse race aspects of the presidential election, and that is a heck of a job Brownie actually being dragged onto national TV to criticize Obama for the storm response.
Yeah. You just look at that and you go, how does he have the gall? This is the man
who mucked up the
response to Hurricane Katrina.
Not how does he have the gall, because we already know what he's like, but who is putting him on TV?
Yes.
Who
decided to tape that? Yes.
Who thinks this man is an expert at anything other than, you know, maybe on a good day how to tie his shoelaces? I mean, it's just...
It's appalling.
It is. So, anyway.
All right.
Let's move on.
All right, court ruling in Ohio?
Yeah, a three-judge federal appeals panel made up entirely of people appointed by one George W. Bush issued a stay of a previous court order that had ordered the Secretary of State in Ohio, his Republican buddies, to stop disenfranchising voters who had voted on the wrong precinct. Here's what's going on. In the state of Ohio, they are trying to throw out ballots of people who were directed by poll workers to vote in the wrong precinct. And this is something where this used to happen in King County in person elections here too. They have multiple precincts very often, especially in urban centers, which is to say centers with high non-white populations who tend to vote Democratic, tend to have multiple precincts at the same polling station. If the poll worker puts you in the wrong line and you cast your ballot in that wrong line, what this court ruling does is says the state can disallow your vote.
And that's crazy.
It is not only crazy, but it gives partisan people a tremendous incentive to become poll workers and direct you to the wrong line in those kind of precincts. And, you know, again, we are seeing, as with the King County GOP stuff, as with all sorts of other things that are bubbling to the surface around the country in the past few weeks, a coordinated national effort and a coordinated effort that's being manifested in just countless local ways in different places of one of the two major political parties in this country to disenfranchise people, to prevent them from voting, and if they do vote, to prevent those votes from being counted or counted accurately.
On to this week in the alternate universe.
Yeah, we've been using the little alternate universe feature to highlight people who just aren't living among us in different parts of the country who have odd opinions about what constitutes reality. Well, one of them that made national headlines this week is, in fact, living among us.
Physically.
And that they live among us. John Koster, who's the Republican candidate in the 1st Congressional District of Washington, running against Susan DelBene, and who is very much a Tea Party guy, and he made national headlines this week for the following quote, incest is so rare. I mean, it's so rare. But the rape thing, you know, I know a woman who was raped and kept her child, gave it up for adoption. She doesn't regret it. In fact, she's a big pro-life proponent. But on the rape thing, it's like, how does putting more violence onto a woman's body and taking the life of an innocent child that's a consequence of this crime, how does that make it better? You want to even begin to try and unpack that? Because I find at least a half dozen things that are just head shaking about
that. Well, my initial response was, gosh, Koster, taking away a woman's choice in that situation can certainly make it a whole lot worse for her. That was my initial response.
Except that the woman actually isn't part of that whole calculation.
In his mind. And then my second response was that incest is not so rare as he thinks.
It's not rare at all.
Yeah, and I went to the internet and I thought, you know, these Republicans who come out and try to make all of this stuff sound like it's not happening, like women don't get pregnant when they're raped.
That's our next one.
I decided to look up a few statistics. You know, I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do the 5 minutes of research that these jerks simply can't do. So I did a little bit of research. According to reporting of rape, which is underreported, about 1 out of 6 women will report that they have been raped or have been the victim of an attempted rape in their lifetime. 1 out of 6 women. Some folks say if you count rape that's not reported, it's about 1 out of 3 women. Well, if about 5%, according to reportings, if 5% of people who are raped, and this includes male and female victims, it includes victims who are too young to get pregnant and victims who are too old to get pregnant, if about 5% of them actually get pregnant from a one-time sexual assault, then that's a lot of people. Given that there's a 311 million people in the United States, and about 155 million of those are women, if 1 out of 6 of them are rape victims, that's almost 26 million rape victims per generation. Now, if 5% of those get pregnant, by my calculations, that's 1,298,000 pregnancies in each generation. That's not rare. Now, of girls, grades 9 through 12, 12% of them have been sexually abused. Now, of those girls who have been sexually abused, a little more than a third of them were attacked by a family member. That's incest. So that means in any given school, if you walk into any given high school, that means about one girl in every classroom has been the victim of incest.
And
That's not rare.
No, it's not rare. That one triggered me as well. And I would add to that that not only is the statement there offensive because incest is not rare, but incest is a crime even more so than rape and sexual assault that thrives on invisibility. It thrives on not being reported. It thrives on nobody but the victim and the family member knowing about it. And, you know, it's often years or if ever before it comes out, because the perpetrator has so much ongoing power over the victim. And so, when you say incest is rare, when you say it doesn't really exist, that reinforces for people that this is an invisible crime, that it doesn't exist, and it makes the crime easier to commit for perpetrators. John Koster, in making this statement, is not only being dismissive of incest, he is enabling incest. He is allowing incest in his district, in his neighborhood, on his street to take place right now, and giving comfort and the cloak of invisibility to those perpetrators.
When you deny
that's how offensive it is.
When you deny that it happens, you make it invisible. And when you make it invisible, you make it that much easier for the perpetrators to do it and to get away with it.
And that is the man who would be the next congressional representative for the northeast suburbs of Seattle, get him out.
All right. Okay. Other...
Other national.
Oh, yeah, sure. Representative Roscoe Barrett, the an existing congressman from Maryland, you mentioned pregnancies as a result of rape. Well, his quote, and let's see if you can unpack this, quote, if you really, there are very few pregnancies as a result of rape, fortunately, and incest compared to the usual abortion. What is the percentage of abortions for rape? It is tiny. It is a tiny, tiny percentage. In terms of the percentage of pregnancies, percentage of abortions for rape as compared to overall abortions, it's a tiny, tiny percentage. Most abortions are for what purpose? They just don't want to have a baby. The second reason for abortion is that you like a boy and it's a girl or vice versa. And I know a lot of people who are opposed to abortion who are pro-choice. End quote.
Okay. Now, that quote is so idiotic. I don't think anybody could unpack it and make any sense out of it.
But
first off, it's like, can you give us real numbers? You know, these people can't because they're not interested in doing the real research. And secondly, I wonder what else he has that's so tiny, tiny that he has to keep emphasizing the tiny, tiny, tiny that percentage.
It is tiny, tiny, tiny. And I think his brain is one of those things, but there could be others.
There could be others, yes.
And the other thing that I found interesting about that, of course, he's, again, trotting out this fallacy that there are very few pregnancies as a result of rape or incest. Yeah. But the reasons that he gave for somebody having an abortion are they don't like the gender of the child, or they just don't want to have a baby. Now, there's nothing in there about the trauma of sexual assault. There is nothing in there about the health of the mother. There is nothing in there about economic conditions that make it impossible to raise a child, or if you're very young and are simply not in a position to be able to do justice to it. Nothing in there about almost all of the reasons people actually make that choice. It is totally divorced
economic
from reality.
Reasons, yeah. Reasons of mental health, of depression, of an inability to care for children, for example.
Or even just simple family planning.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Starting to run short on time. Let's Koch Industries.
Yeah. Koch Industries. Georgia Pacific, which has obviously a lot of employees in the Pacific Northwest, they're based in Portland, is owned by Koch Industries. And there's a bit of a scandal going on because all 45,000 employees of Georgia Pacific have received letters from the parent company endorsing Romney and saying, your livelihood depends on this election. That's kind of thinly veiled there. Previously, Koch has issued a rule to employees that even if your social media conduct is outside of the workplace and or non-work related, it must not reflect negatively on Georgia Pacific's reputation, its products, or its brands, which some people are taking to have political content as well, that if you are publicly, for example, in support of Obama, there will be reprisals. It also requires employees to get Georgia Pacific approval to run for office or to serve on nonprofit boards, for ostensibly the same reason. All of this stuff is very, very worrisome about people's ability to be citizens in a democracy.
Yeah.
And underscoring that corporations in many ways, and starting with the most ideologically active ones like Koch Industries, are really trying to set the terms of what is socially and culturally acceptable in this country.
Yeah, not just when you're at work. Americans have long accepted that your freedom of speech has to be checked at the door when you enter the workplace, but also they're now extending that to when you're outside of the workplace.
All right. And Alabama.
Federal court overturned much of Alabama's very strict immigration law, which was modeled on but actually tougher than Arizona's. It blocked the parts, including language that made it a crime for undocumented immigrants to work or solicit work, imposed criminal penalties to hide, quote, an alien, or to rent property to anybody in the U.S. illegally, and it required state officials to... It required state officials to check the immigration status of children in public schools. All that stuff has been thrown out, and hopefully that will be a precedent also for similar very draconian measures in other states.
All right. Mm-hmm. On to international, starting with China.
Yeah, this week Chinese protesters stopped the construction of a petrochemical plant in Ningbo in China. The protest started last week with farmers blocking a road and quickly spread to thousands of people demonstrating in a downtown square. State-run company Sinopec announced this week that it would halt construction of the $8.8 billion expansion to add a paraxylene plant to a local refinery. Paraxylene, or PX, is toxic and carcinogenic. It's also a very important ingredient in making polyester, plastic bottles, and the production of paints. Congratulations to those Chinese protesters.
And these types of environmental protests, and some of them have been truly massive, have been going on, especially in South China, for the past several years and gotten very little attention in the rest of the world, but that has huge implications.
It's a spreading environmental movement.
All right. And Imran Khan.
Imran Khan is probably the most popular politician in Pakistan and likely to be the next prime minister. He became the third prominent Pakistani critic of U.S. drone activity in Pakistan to either be denied entry to the United States or delayed past his speaking engagement this week. He was on getting on a plane to go from Toronto to New York City to attend a fundraising luncheon and instead detained by U.S. Customs and Immigration officials for 3 hours, specifically questioned about his opinions about the U.S. drone program, and as a result missed attending the luncheon. Now, remember, this is a drone program that, according to the United States, officially does not exist. They can't comment on whether it exists or not, even though it quite obviously does.
They can certainly comment to foreign officials like Imran Khan.
Yeah, this is idiotic for foreign policy, of course. You can imagine the uproar if some foreign country treated one of the more popular, say a Mitt Romney, somebody who was a prospective U.S. leader. If he had been, say, flying into France and they had detained him for 3 hours and questioned him about what he thought about budget cuts. But the real target in here, and the reason these people are not specifically being allowed to come to the United States to talk about the drone program, is censorship of Americans, trying to prevent people like you and I from finding out of the real impact of this program from people who are witnessing it on the ground day to day. And that's what's really worrisome about this.
All right. And quickly, events.
Yeah. As we mentioned, 10 o'clock this morning, the King County Republican Party is going to be, for the first of 4 days in a row, going to be hiring people at $20 an hour to do canvassing for the tremendous public service of helping people fill out their ballots. And then they'll take the ballots from those people and presumably anyway, take them down to election headquarters. So go get hired, make some money off the GOP, and bring some stamps and do it, and make sure they actually get sent. 845 106th Avenue North in Bellevue, 10 o'clock this morning. And then also, Tuesday, remember, is the voting deadline, and all of our various reminders and endorsements around what's on the ballot this year are at www.eatthestate.org, or where you find free publications around town. Wednesday, November 7th, after the election, 8:30 in the morning, there will be a courthouse rally to support Maddie Pfeiffer of Olympia. She is the fourth anarchist that has been hauled before a supposedly secret grand jury, and is also likely to be held in contempt and jailed for refusing to testify for this fishing expedition around local activism. Also, no matter who wins the election, on Wednesday, Lake Forest Park for Peace from 5 until 6:30 will be having an after-election candlelight vigil, since we're still going to have war, whichever way it goes. That'll be at the corner of Ballinger Way and Bothell Way in Lake Forest Park. And then on Thursday, November 8th, from 7 till 9 o'clock, Elections 2012, Where Do Progressives Go From Here? That'll be a discussion at the Common Good Cafe at University Temple United Methodist Church, 43rd and 15th Northeast in the U District.
All right. Yeah. Talking as we do every week with John Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both of you Eat the State, and you just told people where they can find Eat the State.
And you can find more of my material at mariatomczyk.com.